The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks to Richard Palmer for filling in yesterday on the show, reporting from our Edstone studio across the pond. One viewer wrote in, wow, what a brilliant young man you are. So eloquent and interesting. What would we do without you all? So some good feedback there for young Richard, who is getting a little bit older. He's got a couple of kids now that are growing fast. So it's great to see that feedback, and we're always glad for him to be able to fill in as he does so well. Well, going back to the program just before his show yesterday, I pointed to that scripture in Romans 1, verse 25, where it talks about changing the truth of God into a lie. And we really see that every day in the news cycle, it seems. People that are more concerned about their truth or their narrative than they are about evidence and facts. So willing to change truth into a lie. Think about what we've been hearing for months. This case that, well, really, Sam and I resisted getting into. Just thought, well, we'll wait until the investigation is over. But this case of Breonna Taylor, who lost her life back in March during this police raid, she was caught in the crossfire. So obviously her family is distraught, and I believe there was a huge payout from the city as part of the settlement. But then you have all these celebrities, all of these professional athletes wearing the T-shirts saying that these policemen are guilty of murder. You hear about a no-knock raid, another term that we have to become familiar with now. The police evidently barging into this house unannounced without knocking. And then they just start firing away. And Breonna evidently is in her bed sleeping. This is what we were told. This was the narrative. And now after the investigation, we find out that the police officers, they did announce their presence. They did knock on the door. We find out that Breonna and her boyfriend, she was right there next to him as he opened fire on the officers when they did barge into the house after there was no response. She was not sleeping. She was in the hallway next to her boyfriend, and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, he's the one that opened fire on the officers first. And then the police officers returned fire, and they didn't kill Mr. Walker, but they killed Breonna. So a very different set of facts than what we've been hearing in recent months. Now, everyone was gearing up for violence and rioting in Louisville. That's where this happened back in March. Two police officers last night were shot. You may have seen pictures of this U-Haul that had pulled up. It was just in this random parking lot full of rioting supplies. So these are not individuals. This is not a movement that's interested in justice or peace. They're not seeking facts and evidence. They're looking for another excuse to riot. They're looking for more space to destroy. And in a lot of places in the United States, the local and city and even state officials are giving them that space. Now, from some of the footage through the night, it looks like the police and the mayor there in Louisville, that they're not going to stand for the kind of rioting that we've seen maybe in some other cities. But the demonstrations and the rioting, it as it often does, it spreads. And no matter what this attorney general says, he's a black man, by the way, but no matter what he says, you're still going to have LeBron James and those types out there saying they're guilty of murder. This is a grave injustice. There were no charges of murder, just charges for the third police officer who was, I guess, firing somewhat wildly to where his bullets went into the apartment next door. But outside of that, no charges of murder. Reuters said demonstrations in Louisville wore on past nightfall in defiance of the 9 p.m. curfew and remained mostly peaceful. That's the typical reporting, until several gunshots rang out in the midst of a skirmish between protesters and heavily armed police. That's, again, one sentence with mostly peaceful and gunshots ringing out in the same sentence. How many times have we seen this kind of reporting, this kind of coverage? Mostly peaceful until somebody got shot. Mostly peaceful until the gunshots were heard. Friday night, by the way, if you go back to last week, there was a black man wearing a Justice for Breonna Taylor shirt. He walked into this bar and shot three people. And it barely covered in the news. You can only imagine what kind of coverage it would have gotten had that individual been wearing a MAGA hat or something like that. But he's wearing this T-shirt, Justice for Breonna Taylor. And he walks into this bar and randomly shoots three people. That was last week. Well, as I say, here comes the attorney general. His name is Daniel Cameron. And he announced that the grand jury had looked into this and found that there is no evidence of murder. This is what the Kentucky AG had to say yesterday, clip one.
I think it is worth repeating again that our investigation found that Mattingly and Cosgrove were justified in their use of force after having been fired upon by Kenneth Walker.
That's the black attorney general from Kentucky who said that they were justified in firing back at Mr. Walker. No charges, by the way, filed against Mr. Walker for firing upon police officers. Just the one charge, as I say, for the third officer. This is from Conservative Treehouse. It says the media claimed Breonna Taylor was shot during a no-knock warrant. False. The media claimed Breonna Taylor was shot in her bed. False. The media claimed Breonna Taylor was murdered. False. Everything the media and lawyer Ben Crump claimed about the death of Breonna Taylor and the circumstances around her death was based on lies. It was based on the Black Lives Matter narrative. Based on lies. It says the officials in Kentucky allowed a mountain of lies to grow until the evidence was finally presented to a grand jury and the Kentucky Attorney General was forced to admit the truth. So he came out yesterday with the truth, but it's not going to matter. And there's still half of America that will believe LeBron James. This is what the AG went on to say yesterday, clip two.
In the early morning hours of March 13th, officers from LMPD executed a search warrant at 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment 4. This was Miss Breonna Taylor's residence. The officers were advised by superiors to knock and announce their presence in serving this specific search warrant. Sergeant Mattingly and Detectives Cosgrove and Hankinson had no known involvement in the preceding investigation or obtainment of the search warrant. They were called into duty as extra personnel to effectuate the service of the search warrant. They only had information conveyed to them during their prior briefing.
So this is the Attorney General laying out the facts of this case. And what is interesting to me is here are these three officers. They're basically just on assignment. They didn't have anything to do with getting the search warrant. They were carrying out orders. And yet we're led to believe that they're just on the hunt for black people, on the hunt for unarmed black people, to murder them. Put yourself in the position of these police officers carrying out orders on some kind of a drug raid. I guess there's some details we still don't know about this. But he's had this attorney general, he's had months. And of course, the tide of public opinion is that there needs to be justice. And he's, as I say, he's a black man himself. And yet, the evidence is not there. Here he is again, laying out the facts of the case, clip 3.
Evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. In other words, the warrant was not served as a no-knock warrant. When officers were unable to get anyone to answer or open the door to apartment 4, the decision was made to breach the door. After breaching the door, Sergeant Mattingly was the first and only officer to enter the residence. Sergeant Mattingly identified 2 individuals standing beside one another at the end of the hall, a male and a female. In his statement, he says that the male was holding a gun, arms extended, in a shooting stance. Sergeant Mattingly saw the man's gun fire, heard a boom, and immediately knew he was shot as a result of feeling heat in his upper thigh. Kenneth Walker fired the shot that hit Sergeant Mattingly, and there is no evidence to support that Sergeant Mattingly was hit by friendly fire from other officers. Mr. Walker admitted that he fired one shot and was the first to shoot. Sergeant Mattingly returned fire down the hallway. Mattingly fired 6 shots. Almost simultaneously, Detective Cosgrove, also in the doorway, shot 16 times. This all took place in a matter of seconds.
As so many of these incidents do, just happens in a matter of seconds. And the shooter inside the home admitted that he shot first, and he hit a police officer. He hit his leg. And then there was another witness that was there and heard the policeman knocking on the door, asking for the inhabitants there to come and answer the door. Pretty amazing, but particularly when you compare it to what most in America have heard over these last several months. Back to this article, it says, as with the Trayvon Martin case, and as with the Michael Brown case, and as with the Freddie Gray case, everything pushed by the media about Breonna Taylor, this case was based on lies. It says the media will now refuse to admit the truth and will now spin the narrative to claim they never reported incorrectly. Indeed, you look at some of the coverage and they're beside themselves that this attorney general would come out and announce what he did yesterday. He must be a Republican. He must be a conservative. So it all gets back to politics. Never mind the facts and the evidence. Just change the truth into a lie and continue. Continue with the lying. Listen to A.G. Cameron again from yesterday, clip 4.
The use of force by Mattingly and Cosgrove was justified to protect themselves. This justification bars us from pursuing criminal charges in Miss Breonna Taylor's death. The truth is now before us. The facts have been examined, and a grand jury comprised of our peers and fellow citizens has made a decision. Justice is not often easy. It does not fit the mold of public opinion, and it does not conform to shifting standards. It answers only to the facts and to the law.
Justice must answer to the facts and the law. Seems pretty basic and simple, I'd say. There has to be facts. And then what are the laws? What laws were broken? Mr. Cameron went on to talk about mob justice. There's a lot of that today. What does the mob want? Well, here's what he said, clip 5.
If we simply act on emotion or outrage, there is no justice. Mob justice is not justice. Justice sought by violence is not justice. It just becomes revenge.
Now, you turn on to CNN last night, they couldn't believe that statement in particular. Mob justice is not justice. How could he say something like that? Suddenly, this is controversial. He went on to say that criminal justice is a quest for truth, evidence, and facts. It's refreshing to hear someone coming from the African-American community, saying that this is what criminal justice is all about. You have to have the truth and the evidence and the facts. He went on to say that, look, even with this investigation completed, there still will be celebrities and sports stars that come forward with their opinions, telling us how we should feel. Here's what he said, clip 6.
There will be celebrities, influencers, and activists who, having never lived in Kentucky, will try to tell us how to feel, suggesting they understand the facts of this case and that they know our community and the Commonwealth better than we do. But they don't.
But they don't. And it's not just celebrities. It's not just the athletes. Michelle Obama, during her DNC speech from a few weeks back, she mentioned Breonna Taylor on the list of blacks who had been murdered, by police. That's the wife of the previous president of the United States, firmly on the side of lies, of protesting, disorderly protests, and even rioting. One final statement from the Kentucky Attorney General, clip 7.
In a world that is forcing many of us to pick a side, I choose the side of justice. I choose the side of truth.
That's the Kentucky Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, yesterday, pointing out what we're seeing more and more each day, two sides to America, one on the side of truth and justice and one on the side of lies and disruption. Someone was telling me the other day how that Black Lives Matter, its mission statement or something from its website, had been either deleted or taken down because they had gotten some criticism for their Marxist vision for the United States. But here is a movement, and it's still all over the arenas. It's still all over the sports, professional sports. Celebrities are on board with it. Truth, though, truth fails, as so many prophecies bring out. That's over in Isaiah 59. And it's a battle every day just to get out there and to spread the truth. God's truth in particular, but even with respect to basics. Basics with respect to news reporting. It fails. When we come back, we'll switch gears a little bit and go to a statement that President Trump made yesterday about the confirmation of the 9th Supreme Court justice and the impact that the Supreme Court may well have on the election in November. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. the Bible, and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
So yesterday, President Trump was asked by a reporter why it was so important for him to nominate a Supreme Court justice, which he intends to do this Saturday, I believe it is, Saturday at 5 p.m. Washington time, and why it's important to do this now before what will undoubtedly be a contested election. And here's how he responded to that, clip 8.
Yes, I think it's very important. I think this will end up in the Supreme Court, and I think it's very important that we have 9 justices. This scam that the Democrats are pulling, it's a scam. The scam will be before the United States Supreme Court. And I think having a 4-4 situation is not a good situation. If you get that, I don't know that you'd get that. I think it should be 8-0 or 9-0. But just in case it would be more political than it should be, I think it's very important to have a ninth justice.
So you can imagine the way the left, the radical left, takes this. They say, well, you're getting the ninth one in there to serve your political purposes. He's going to get reelected because of the Supreme Court. But President Trump, he's watching and listening to and observing what many of you have been observing if you've been watching this program. Statements along the way from his opponents, from Hillary Clinton, telling Joe Biden, don't dare concede on election night. We know all about the mail-in fraud, the mail-in voting, all of these ballots that are being distributed to people around the United States, some that have been dead for 20 years, some that have moved to another state 5, 10, 15 years ago. Millions and millions of ballots just flooded everywhere. There's going to be a lot of ballots out there for Democrats to harvest in the weeks that follow the election. And so Hillary Clinton says to Joe Biden, don't concede. Don't concede. Give us time to do our dirty work. Here's what Hillary Clinton said, clip 9.
So we've got to have a massive legal operation, and I know the Biden campaign is working on that. You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
She wants it to drag out, and she's not alone. What we're seeing, and my father has explained this before, is just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power, in order to return to power. And so you put it all together with the headlines at the Washington Post, this election's going to spark violence. You had the story from a few weeks ago that I read to you from that talked about the general, that top-tier general that said, you know, we may have to forcibly remove this president from office. You have all the talk about the red mirage on November 3rd. If it looks like Trump is ahead, well, just hang tight. Hang tight for the next few days. Hang tight as it turns blue. We heard this clip a while back from Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, clip 10.
That there's nothing illegitimate about taking a few extra days or even weeks in order to make sure that all the votes get counted. In fact, it would be illegitimate if we didn't make sure that all of the ballot votes were counted.
So they're all in it together, big tech. You've got big media. You've got the Democrat media complex. You've got ballot harvesting. And they've had quite a lot of success doing that even before this coming election, especially in California, places like that. So, of course, the president wants a ninth justice in there Think about what would happen if it was a 4-4 tie. If it does end in the courts, which Hillary Clinton says it should already. And so he's rushing to, some would say rushing. Others would say, well, this is not without historical precedence. It's happened before. 17 times, I think it is, during an election year. But what he's going up against is a lawless movement, a Marxist movement that is doing anything and everything it can. It's all connected to even what I discussed in the first segment, promoting violence, encouraging violence. There were commentators on CNN last night doing just that, encouraging violence and rioting because of what the attorney general in Kentucky said yesterday, following an investigation, following what sounded like a very thorough investigation. And yet here are these mouthpieces just encouraging violence, mayhem, division, destruction. U-Haul trucks, think of it, showing up at parking lots for the looters and the arsonists and the protesters to grab hold of, you know, projectiles, objects that they can throw at police officers, demonstration signs, paint, whatever. These are not seekers of truth. They're seeking to destroy and conquer. Nancy Pelosi, by the way, she was on this podcast with a New York Times reporter. And as is often the case, we heard it with George Stephanopoulos a few days ago, too. Egging them on, saying, well, have you guys considered impeachment? Maybe you can consider impeachment. These are the reporters, the ones covering the news, pitching these ideas to these leading powerful Democrats. Well, here's a New York Times reporter doing just the same thing. And listen to Nancy Pelosi's response. This is clip 12.
What is your power to do this? I get the election, but you can get up more. You can speak out more. You can do more impeachments, things like that. Do you have enough power?
Well, we can impeach him every day of the week for anything he does.
We can impeach him any day of the week for anything that he does, anything that he does. Now, you go over to Article 2 in Section 4 of the Constitution, where it talks about impeachment. You can impeach a president for treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors. It doesn't say anything that he does. It doesn't say on any day of the week. These are people abusing their power. These are people drunk on power, and they want more. They want the White House. They want the presidency so that they can carry out their agenda, so that they can finish transforming, fundamentally transforming the United States of America. I mentioned that dying wish, that bogus dying wish from Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Tuesday's program as well. And I think it's interesting that she supposedly said that her fervent wish was not to be replaced until a new president is installed. Just an interesting choice of words, installed, not elected or whatever else, you know, the popular will of the people, but they're looking to install their president, to install their movement. I think so many of them already know they're not going to win by popular vote. So they're looking at all of the other options, and all the options are on the table. Nancy Pelosi, she's got a quiver full of arrows. But as we've also covered from our own literature, along the way, God has been upsetting their plans. God's fingerprints have been evident. He has been active, as has the devil. Of course, the devil is hard at work. He knows his time is short. Revelation 12 brings this out. But God's purpose does stand, and God did intervene to save Israel temporarily, and he did it in a lot of ways to help his work, to ensure that this work finishes its commission. Speaking of the radical left, the Senate yesterday released this report on Hunter Biden and his involvement with Ukraine, Russia, China. It's just a devastating report. 87 pages, I think it is. I forget the senators that were primarily responsible for it. But just to read a few bits from John Solomon's take, he went through the report and he says, a year-long Senate investigation concluded Wednesday that Hunter Biden's efforts to cash in on foreign business deals during his father's vice presidency, that would be Joe Biden, raised alarm among U.S. government officials who perceived an ethical conflict of interest and flagged concerns about possible criminal activity ranging from bribery to sex trafficking. Now, some of this came out in the lead up to the impeachment over a phone call, a phone call that President Trump made to the Ukrainian president. This was all going on during the Obama administration. And even some of those Obama officials that were serving in the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine, even some of them were sounding the alarm. Even some of them were telling Obama officials, look, this is pretty fishy here what Hunter Biden is doing. And his father is the vice president of the United States. It says here, the long-awaited joint report by the GOP-led House or Senate Homeland and Government Affairs and Senate Finance Committees delivered several blockbuster revelations less than 2 months before Election Day, suggesting Obama administration officials ignored clear warning signs about ethical conflicts and possible extortion risks involving Joe Biden's family. This is astounding to me. The news media, this is, keep in mind, this is a big snooze fest as far as the media is concerned. They could not care less about Hunter Biden or Joe Biden for that matter. They're out there telling you what didn't actually happen with Breonna Taylor. They're out there encouraging violence, stirring up hatred, inflaming race wars. It says perhaps the most explosive revelation was that the U.S. Treasury Department flagged payments collected overseas by Hunter Biden and business partner Devin Archer for possible illicit activities. The so-called suspicious activity reports flagged millions of dollars in transactions from the Ukrainian gas company Burisma, a Russian oligarch named Yelena Baturina, and Chinese businessmen with ties to Beijing's communist government. This is all according to the report. He has all of these financial transactions or ties to Ukrainians, to the wife of the former mayor of Moscow, I believe it is, and then all these Chinese connections to the Communist Party in China. I mean, there's collusion all over the place. It says the Treasury records acquired by the chairman show potential criminal activity relating to transactions among and between Hunter Biden, his family, and his associates with Ukrainian, Russian, Kazakh, and Chinese nationals. It says the report, citing U.S. government records, also raised concerns about possible ties to sex and human trafficking rings. I mean, can you even believe this? This is the son of the one running for president of the United States. Listen to how Joe Biden defended himself and defended his son in a recent interview with Axios, clip 18.
What's your understanding of what your son was doing for an extraordinary amount of money?
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board. I found out he was on the board after he was on the board, and that was it. And there's nobody.
Well, you've had a lot of time. Isn't this something you want to get to the bottom of?
No, because I trust my son.
But that doesn't pass the smell test. Like, when you're vice president, isn't there a higher standard? Don't you need to know what's happening with your family? Don't you need to put down some guardrails?
Unless there was something that was, there was something on its face that was wrong. There's nothing on its face that was wrong. So look, if you want to talk about problems, you know, let's talk about Trump's family. I mean, come on. This is, these guys are amazing.
You guys are amazing, he said. If we're going to talk about family, if we're going to talk about children, let's talk about Trump's children, you see? His son gets a wire transfer from the wife of the former mayor of Moscow, okay? A Russian oligarch. $3.5 million wire transfer. And he says, hey, if you want to talk about problems, let's talk about Don Jr. Okay, what if Don Jr. was the principal player here in an 87-page Senate report? All of these connections to Kazakhstan, China, Ukraine, Russia. You think this would be ignored by the media? You think this would be brushed aside? And drug and sex trafficking? Well, there it is. Lee Smith, by the way, he had this article at Tablet a week or two ago about America's China class. And he feels like this is what is behind so many of the attacks on President Trump and his family. They're trying to destroy President Trump because so many of these people, it's not just Hunter Biden alone. There are others who have high people in high places in the U.S. government that have enriched themselves for years because of being paid off by the Chinese or the Russians or whoever. Lee Smith says the American elite's financial relationship with China is the key to understanding what's been happening in America the past 4 years. Any president, Democrat or Republican, who took on China would have been targeted by the China class. Because it was Trump flying the Republican banner who sided with America's working men and women, the Democrats resorted to alliances with powers that now threaten the stability and security of the country. So much corruption. And how much of it do we even see? How much more of this goes on? Out of view, under the cover of darkness. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a Bible study on the subject of 2 Thessalonians 3. You're listening to Stephen Fleur, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded after pledging to follow in his footsteps methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Last week we finished our study in 2 Thessalonians in my Epistles of Paul class. Just some really great scriptures, strong scriptures in the final chapter, chapter 3 of 2 Thessalonians, about working hard to support God's work. These were God's people that had gotten excited about the truth when Paul came in there the first time during his second missionary journey. And he talked a lot about the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And this got them pretty excited about the prophecies of God. But then by the time he writes his second letter, We learned that there had been some dissident literature circulating in the region, and some had taken this to be from the Apostle Paul himself. Imagine that. Someone attacking the church back then and lying, lying, sending a letter to the area as if it was from Paul. And Paul said, that didn't come from me at all. And he set them straight on what had to happen before the return of Christ to this earth. Some of these brethren had even given up their jobs. They had stopped working because they thought that the return of Christ was so close. They stopped being productive. They stopped supporting the work, which is why we're brought into the church, to help do the work. That's where the focus always is. So Paul says here in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 6, "Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw yourselves from every brother that walks disorderly and not after the tradition which he received of us." So there were a few problems by this point in the church, and some had to be put out of the church. Some had to be suspended for a time. And Paul says to the brethren, now make sure that you withdraw from a brother that's walking disorderly. If he's not living the way that we're supposed to live, the way that we're commanded to live, then we ought to shun him until he gets back right with God. Verse 7, it says, "For yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we," Paul and his fellow ministers, that is, "for we behave not ourselves disorderly among you." They came in there and they set an example for the brethren. They worked hard. They worked hard, as I've been pointing out in the Epistles of Paul class. Paul really went overboard, whether he was in Thessalonica or in Corinth or wherever, to work on the side, even as a tent maker. So he was carrying out his ministerial responsibilities during the day and then working at night to provide for himself, just so that he wouldn't be a burden on the brethren. He said, "You've seen our example. Now follow in those steps. Follow in my steps," like he said over in 1 Corinthians 11. "Be a follower of me as I follow Jesus Christ." Verse 8, he says, "Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you." This was a congregation that probably was quite poor. And so Paul and his companions, as I say, they went above and beyond not to put any of these financial burdens on the brethren. That doesn't mean the brethren weren't submitting tithes and offerings to the church, as we're commanded to do. But evidently, a lot of that stayed in the local area for local purposes. Paul was able to work night and day, for the most part, to provide for his own, to provide for his traveling party. Verse 9 says, "Not because we have not power or authority, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us." See, they really wanted to set a fine example of what it means to work hard for God, of what it means to be a hard worker. Verse 10 says, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat." This is common sense, as far as the Bible's concerned. Now, there's a lot of governments in the world today, they don't subscribe to this kind of thinking. A lot of times you see governments all over the world that reward laziness, idleness. Paul said, if you don't work, then you shouldn't eat. This is a command. This is a command. You can read that it's actually in the Sabbath command. Go over to Exodus 20. It's not just that the seventh day is a day of rest and rejuvenation. The first 6 days are days of work. That's right there in the Sabbath command. One of the big ten. One of the big ten commandments. Here is Paul. Here is Paul saying that God forbids Christians to be slothful. This is how you avoid poverty and a lot of other social ills, as we're seeing in our society today, by working hard. You think of these people that are taking to the streets, if they were working night and day, they wouldn't have time for mayhem. They wouldn't have time for this nonsense, this evil run amok. They wouldn't have time to destroy. Well, their whole thinking, their whole mindset would be different. It's not just a matter of work, obviously, but I think you get the point. If you're leading a productive, Christ-oriented life, well, you're a help. You're a support to society. You're not tearing it down. You're building it up. What do the Proverbs say? The soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. He'll have everything he needs because he works for it. He works hard. Another one says, he that tills his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that follows after vain persons shall have poverty enough. He that follows after vain persons, is that the kind of thing we want to reward? Do we want to send handouts to people that are out there working to destroy cities? Working to burn cities? Working to defund the police? Verse 11, Paul says, for we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. You see, there's a saying, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. We see a lot of idle minds in our society today, and look at how Satan is using that. He's manipulating those minds. He's filling those minds with lies, with attitudes, bad attitudes, evil impulses. Meditate on these scriptures, these proverbs that I've mentioned. God means for us to work hard. You think about what we have coming up, we in the church, at the establishment of God's kingdom, upon the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. We're going to have to build a godly society. We're going to have to raise the ruins. We're going to have to build cities God's way, build a society God's way. It's going to be quite a lot different from what we're seeing in the world today, obviously. Verse 12, it says, now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. You see, keep quiet. Stop running your mouth and get to work. It's easy to just talk, to be a big talker. Get out there and work. We don't need spongers in our church, in our society. This echoes what Paul said in 1 Timothy 5:8. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, this is in the Revised Standard Version, and especially for his own family, so it's not even just providing for yourself as a man, you've got to provide for your family as well. Paul says if you don't, you're worse than an unbeliever. You're worse than an infidel. If you don't provide for your family, if you don't take care of your family, Henry Ford, the famous car maker from back in the early part of the early to middle part of the 20th century, he said in his autobiography, there is no reason why a man who is willing to work should not be able to work and receive the full value of his work. He was famously known, Henry Ford was, for paying high wages back in the day. Even for workers that were just working on the assembly line, it wasn't the most complicated work. But if they came along and they worked hard, he rewarded them. And he said they should be rewarded for their work. He went on to say, There is equally no reason why a man who can but will not work should not receive the full value of his services to the community. If he contributes nothing, he should take nothing away. He should have the freedom of starvation. That's some wise counsel from Henry Ford. If you don't want to work, well, then you should be free to starve. That's what Paul is saying here. If you don't work, well, then you shouldn't eat. If you don't work, you're worse than an unbeliever. Hard work, hard, diligent work, that's one of the evidences of a true Christian. Verse 13, it says, "But you, brethren, be not weary in well-doing." Don't be weary in well-doing. Don't get tired. The margin says there, "Faint not." And you can see the context for this admonition. Paul says it elsewhere, by the way. Galatians 6, he says, "Don't be weary in well-doing." The Apostle James said in James 1:22, to be a doer of God's word, not a hearer only, but a doer. You know, take what you receive, even spiritually. If you apply this principle, it takes work. Like I was saying to the students, it takes work to draw close to God in prayer and Bible study. It takes work to understand and to know the truth of God, the knowledge of God, to grow in godly understanding and wisdom. That takes some diligence. And as I was saying to the students, if you're not in the habit of working hard with your job, your day work, then you're probably not going to be really pushing yourself in those spiritual labors in the early morning hours or at night when we need to draw close to God. Verse 14, it says, "And if any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man, and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed." So you see the context throughout here. These were people walking disorderly. And a big part of the problem is that they just weren't being productive, fruitful members of the body of Christ. They weren't pulling their weight. They weren't interested in hard, diligent labor, whether spiritually or physically. They were lazy. They were slothful. They were idle. They were busybodies. They were causing trouble. They were causing problems for the church, for God's family. And you see God's position here in 2 Thessalonians 3. It's quite strong. It says here finally, verse 15, "You yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother." So don't walk with the disorderly. You don't have to treat him as an enemy, though. You pray for him still, but you admonish him like a brother, like a wayward brother. You want to sound the alarm. You want to wake him up so that he can get back right with God. A couple of comments here that we can finish with before we conclude. This comes from a listener who says, "I have become a regular listener to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show since the spring, and a subscriber to the magazine since this summer." So this is a new listener, a new reader. "I have to say, I will usually skim through magazines and read a full article on the rare occasion, yet I have found every article on the Trumpet to be thoughtful and engaging. I can't recall the last magazine that I read from cover to cover. I'm amazed by the richness, history, relevant facts, and connection to prophecy of each article. Certainly appreciate the necessary context that you all provide for the turbulent times in which we live. He is at the door. Thank you for reminding us of that fact every day." This is someone that's reading the Trumpet magazine from cover to cover. I noticed yesterday we had all of the articles for our latest issue of the magazine. I believe it's the November-December issue. Those were posted at the website just yesterday, or at least uploaded, which means that the magazine itself should be in mailboxes soon. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.